All right. Just kind of shifting gears just a little bit. We've talked through some philosophy and theology and what we're trying to accomplish in children's ministry. Second half of today, I want to get to the teaching tips and how the classroom functions. And so we're moving into kind of the more application side of things. Okay. So when it comes to running a class smoothly, I want to encourage you to a couple things. I put pray first because I wasn't sure I said that enough. To run a class smoothly, you need to pray. So pray beforehand, pray in your class, pray. Secondly, I want to encourage you to pick a schedule and stick to it. So I know, for us right now, especially on Sunday nights, so we're all sharing, it goes week to week. But I just want to encourage you on your particular night to pick a schedule. I debated if I wanted to encourage you all to take the same schedule. That's something that we could do, but I kind of don't want to lock you down to that. So I'm not saying you have to, teach for your 15 or 20 minutes or 25 minutes, and then you do snack and then you do game. And I want you to have the freedom. I'm just encouraging you. You probably should pick to a typical schedule. I would say I would encourage you to start with the lesson. I think that makes sense for them to go from singing and prayer time and then go downstairs. There's already a natural break there. They've got a little natural wiggle out on the, 18 stairs that it takes to get down there. It's just easier to have the kids walk in the room, sit down, the chairs are there, and say hey, we're going right to lesson time right now. But I'm not telling you have to do that. What I'm telling you is you should pick a typical schedule. Don't just say every night we're just totally going to wing it and who knows what order we're going to do things in. You're just not going to run things smoothly. So have a plan. So typically I have been preaching pretty consistently right at 40 minutes. I think Sarah was the one that got stuck with the longest message I've done to this point, which is a 50 minute message. And so I'm sorry. But you can pretty much plan for, it's probably going to be right around the 50 minute range. Cause if I preach for 40 and if we sing and then closing prayer and all that. So basically you're looking at 50 minutes from when you go down. So just have that in your mind, right? Eventually you'll start getting a clearer feel for this. How long is it taking them to eat their snacks or if I'm going to do a coloring page or whatever. So anyway, pick a schedule and I encourage you to stick to it. And then, to run the class smoothly, make your behavioral expectations clear. So the kids will figure you out just like all of you who have kids know the difference between mom and dad, right? So they're and I know this is no shock to you that have kids. Your kids know that there's some things you can do with mom that you just cannot get away with dad, and vice versa. There's some things that mom leaves and all of a sudden, we're playing soccer in the living room and stuff's happening and that doesn't happen with mom. Right. So kids know that they'll actually learn that with you guys too. So I just encourage you to make your behavioral expectations clear. When I was doing children's ministry, I was a children's ministry intern when I was in seminary at Grace Community, and I was the second hour, and a lot of those kids, they had been there the first hour as well. And we had just part of the alphabet for 5-year-olds, Kathy and I were doing at Grace Community, right? So we had, 35 5-year-olds. They'd already been there for an hour and a half or an hour and 45 minutes. And the people before us, they were this couple that, and it was fine. They could do whatever they wanted in their class, but they were you're going to sit here and you're not going to move and you're not going to breathe unless we tell you to, and you're going to be quiet and, all these things, which is it's fine. They run their class the way they want their class, right? Well, when you walk into a classroom where the kids have not hardly gotten out of a chair for an hour and 45 minutes, something happens to kids, right? And Kathy and I were not exactly that way. So I don't think I'm anything goes, but all of a sudden kids knew hey, it's going to be okay for us to go. We're going to do a station over in the corner. So all the kids are going to get up and we're going to go do something different over here. And we're going to move around the room and we're going to do stuff like that. And kids figure out what your behavior expectations are. So just make them clear. If you want a child to sit in a chair and not get up, then that needs to be clear and you need to stick to it. Don't be you may not get up. And then they all get up and you're just okay, no, I said, I'm going to count to 7 and then you're don't be doing this. I'm going to count you down. And, I said you sit down, but I didn't really mean it. Mean what you say and say what you mean. So I'd encourage you not be unrealistic. So don't tell the kids you're going to sit here for the next 45 minutes if you don't have the capability of keeping them in their chair for 45 minutes. Be realistic with what you're going to do. Okay. So just make it clear. All right. That's running the class smoothly. When it comes to teaching, I want to talk about teaching effectively, since teaching is so much at the crux of what we do in children's ministry. I want to encourage you, first of all, to teach with a full heart. Teach with a full heart. What I mean by a full heart is you should know what you're teaching, right? Your heart should already be full with how wonderful God is or how good the gospel is, and even in this particular passage, right? Don't come limping into a passage. Know what it says and ask God for the grace to let your heart be affected by what it is that you're teaching. Okay. What I'm saying is be gripped by the truth. Let it amaze you. I think one of the great things about children's ministry is it can remind us of the awe and wonder that kids have almost naturally at being told things about God that for us have sometimes gotten a little bit old and stale. And the kids are like, "Are you kidding? Like that really happened?" And you're like, "That is pretty great, actually. Like, you know, like it actually is amazing, right?" So be amazed and wonder and let just the childlike side of wonder drive you in how your heart approaches a text. It is wonderful that, like, are you telling me that? I mean, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, like they didn't even smell like smoke. Like, not only are they not dead, like the fire didn't singe even a single hair, and they walk out not even smell. Are you kidding me? Like, that's amazing. Right. So don't walk into Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and be like, "Yeah." And they walked around in the fiery furnace and they came out. That's incredible. Like, let your mind be blown by the power of God and channel that into how you talk to kids about it. Right. So come with a full heart. And you'll be more effective. If you teach with urgency, you will be more effective. I'm not saying volume, yell. I'm just saying there is a passion and intensity that our kids need to know how good God is. And it matters that they believe the gospel. There is a sense of urgency. It's no different than, you know, you may have heard quotes about, even when it comes to preaching, like preaching as a dying man to dying men. Like, we look at kids and we're like, "Hey, they have so long to respond to the gospel. They have, like, today is the day of salvation. Like, I want to beg you to believe what's true about the gospel," right? Have some sense of urgency, without being a weirdo about it, but like have a sense of urgency. Okay. Teach with clarity. Clarity really, really matters, to me all around, but especially with kids. Clear speech. In other words, make your words understandable. So don't be a mumbler. Right? Like, say your words with clarity. I mean, actually your diction, your speech. All right. And then have clarity with how you say it. I frequently need to tell myself to slow down. And so I know that. And there are times when I try to practice that. You might be someone who's a super fast talker. And so there's times that you don't say all, you're like, you're saying words so fast that it's hard for the kids to pick them up. You'll have to work on, like, okay, I need to slow down and I need to say it slower and I'd say it with a little more clarity, right? But whatever it is, that's stuff that we can all work on, clear speech. But then, the clarity of using understandable words. Okay. Don't just be dropping your new favorite theological, you know, slogan you learned or whatever else. And you just like, boom, drop that on the kids. Right. Do I even totally understand superlapsarianism? No. Right. You don't need to like to try to get your kids to figure out all these amazing words. Use words that actually are understandable to a kid. Right. All right. Use a direct outline. When I say a direct outline, especially because we're teaching a range of kids, like 2 to 12 is a pretty substantial range, use a clear outline. And what I'd encourage you is what you're trying to say is one thing. Like, you have one main point that you're just trying to say. You're not trying to say six things or even five things. Say one thing and say it over and over and over again in an understandable way. So make that outline clear. Here is our main point. Right. And this one main point, you're going to see, first of all, this is going to happen. And then second of all, this is going to happen. So these two things are going to happen. But the main idea is, like, give them that main point. There was a guy that taught preaching that had what he called the 1 a.m. rule. The 1 a.m. rule is that your significant other should be able to wake you up at 1 a.m. in the morning on Saturday night and say, "What's the big idea for what you're teaching tomorrow?" And you should be able to say it right straight from dead sleep. And you just wake up and you go, "Here's," like, the point is that should be crystal clear in your mind. And if your main idea about any particular passage is not clear in your mind, I just 100% guarantee it is not going to be clear in the kid's mind, right? You got to teach with clarity, to teach effectively. So have a main idea and say it clearly. Okay. All right. Teach with verbal variety. What I mean by verbal variety is sometimes your voice is going to go up higher and sometimes it's going to come down lower. There are times as Samson was on his way to that woman's house, but the lion jumped out and got it, you know, and right, like all of a sudden you get loud and because they're like, whoa, right? You're engaging them. It's effective. And there are times by slowing down and saying, do you understand how good God is? You just suck them in with how quiet you are, right? Use some verbal variety. Don't be afraid. Like when we get in front of adults, there's times when like, that is like, okay, you're crazy, right? Like if I yelled like that and I wasn't in front of kids, a lot of people would be like, ooh, right? And there are times when as adults, we feel like our vocal range has to fit in this box, right? Because we're talking to adults, right? When you say with, if that's true, and maybe that's not even true, right? But with kids, that box is so much bigger, right? Don't just give them a flat saying, like talk loud, talk soft, talk fast, talk slow. Right. Like give them that verbal variety because that's about effective teaching. Okay. Give them direct boldness. I love kids. I love how kids just say it the way it is. And some of that you also need to embrace and do. Yeah. Flat out. Just tell them. Don't dance around it. Don't try to like, you got to just tell kids as it is. Right. So just spit it out. Right. Get it to them. Right. Fight bad habits. I hate my habit of, So I frequently try to fight my habit. And if you've noticed, and maybe some of you have already picked this up, I know I talked with Joe and Eric about my sermons. And so they now help me. And so they pick up the fact that I sometimes replace my habit with other bad habits, right? So I'm looking for something to fill that space of quiet. And so instead of I'm going to say things like, all right, everybody knows my all right. All right. That's because my brain, like, I don't want there to be quiet. And your brain just does that to you as a speaker, right? Well, you're doing that with kids. And so you got to know what those are and just try to fight them. Everyone says, sometimes everybody's going to do some kind of vocal filler. You just don't want it to be so much that it hinders you from being an effective communicator, right? So you just have to fight those bad habits. If you are serving together in children's ministry, maybe with a wife or with a husband, they can help you. They will notice, hey, you kept going to such and such. You kept, as you were talking, you kept trailing off your sentences and you got quieter and quieter and then you started mumbling and I couldn't really hear you. Right? Like you can get people to help you and go like, hey, just heads up. That wasn't great. Okay. So you fight those bad habits. I say teach with sympathy, just meaning caring about the kids. Think about your kids as you prepare. You're going to talk to real boys and girls, and they really do need to know who God is. And some of them really did have a terrible week, and some of them had a great week. And there's real kids that you're going to be talking to. So think about them. Think with sympathy, with care for them. You want to know your kids. You don't have to know every single thing that's cool or current or hip, but you do need to know your kids. It does matter, right? So the time you spend even outside of your lesson with the kids, finding out what do the kids like to do? What's fun? What's not fun? What are they doing in school? What are they studying? Right? It doesn't matter if kids learn the alphabet or if they are doing simple algebra. Like you want to know your kids. Where are they at and what's happening in their lives? And you should do that with natural conversation before and after and within the children's ministry time. Okay. As they teach with sympathy, I also want to say don't ever berate your kids. Don't ever, like there are times that in children's ministry, you are frustrated that I'm trying to do something good here and you keep not listening or whatever. Sympathy says, I understand kids. I know what it is to be a kid. I once was a kid and I don't just forget, right? It's not reasonable to tell a kid to sit still and don't move a muscle. Yeah, don't ever berate your kids or tear into them. If you need to talk to a kid about a discipline issue, don't shame them in front of the class. Don't make this I'm going to use the peer pressure of the class to make you feel like a terrible kid. I'm going to pull you aside and say, listen, we really talk about this and you really do need to stop, you know, punching the neighbor next to you and that needs, right? But I'm not going to berate you in front of the class. And so be sensitive, be sympathetic towards our kids. Okay. You say like, no, but kids are so wonderful and we would never want to berate them. You either haven't been a parent very long or you haven't been in children's ministry very long, or you're way more sanctified than lots of other people. because there's times when you're just like pulling your hair out. Are you kidding? This is happening in class right now. And it is happening. And so be loving and gracious and gentle, and let's have sympathy for our kids. All right. Teach with application. Our teaching needs to not just be so that our kids know more things. All right. The application is the so what. So work at this. Work at the, you need to do something with this lesson. What are we supposed to do? So yes, God is great. What do I do with that? The gospel tells me I should believe. And what does it tell me about how I should live? So how do you get from here is the story, and we see God and we see his character. And now we need to do something with that. You got to get to the do something, even if it's only a few things. Get them some application. Take the principle and then make it a point what they can do in their lives. Okay. I think effective teaching also happens with illustration. I am a huge object lesson fan for kids. I think that illustration is a key part of how you connect with kids. So let's talk about object lessons, and we'll even do one together. I think you should probably use two or at the most three object lessons in a typical lesson, and you should always tie those to your main point. Don't spend a lot of time illustrating or doing an object lesson on something that is totally secondary and isn't even like you want to get the main point across, and to illustrate that, to do an object lesson for it, you're trying to make that point come alive. Okay. You should also try your illustration or object lesson ahead of time, right? Don't let class time be the first time that you try to do one of those like exploding volcano things. Like, go ahead and give that a whirl ahead of time, and don't experiment in class. Try it, right? You can also evaluate. So try ahead of time, but also afterwards, you can evaluate if your illustrations or object lessons, did the kids remember my point, or did they remember this cool activity I did? Because if all they do is remember the cool activity, and there will be some kids that, yes, they're just going to be like, "Hey, we did this awesome, you know, but why? Why did you do this awesome thing?" It probably means that during that awesome illustration or object lesson, you didn't connect it to what you were trying to teach often enough, right? So always, even in object lesson, always keep bringing it back to, and this is why we're doing this, and this is what you're learning through this, because you want to tie this really engaging activity with what the main idea is. I love using everyday objects. It just became standard in my house. The kids knew that on Saturday they were going to end up missing Nerf guns and toy soldiers and dolls and all kinds of stuff, because they were going to show up on Sunday in the children's lesson, just using everyday objects. What you want to do is get the kids engaged when you're using an illustration to teach effectively. Get them feeling and smelling and tasting and moving. Get them up out of their seats. Get them active. Get them right. You want to engage their senses with a good illustration. And so you want to come prepared. So I always had my backpack, my war bag that I had with me, and it always had what I needed in it. All right. So I know you guys you're not kids anymore, but if you can try to remember how wonderful it is to be a kid when everything is new and exciting, and that will help you with this illustration. Okay. So, we had for 13 years, this little Lego guy was a part of children's ministry at Grace Church of the Valley. This is Larry. And any kid that's ever been in children's ministry or Grace Church of the Valley knows Larry's name and loves Larry deeply. Larry would show up almost every week. Larry would say hello in all of the languages that I know how to say hello in. The kids get to pick what language he wanted to say hi in. This is a little guy. And how did his name become Larry? I don't know. I just picked that one day. And I just like Larry. And the great thing about kids is if you care about something and you make it a deal, it will be a deal for them, right? Like, this is one of my Legos from when I was a kid, right? It's an old city Lego. And he's small. We even got to the point that there was lots and lots of kids in children's ministry. Like, I'd hold him up, and I bet the kids in the back row could hardly see him, right? You have 200 kids, and it's hard to see this poor little guy, right? But everyone loved Larry. Larry has been put into helium balloons and floated to the ceiling. He's been baptized. He's been beheaded when he was John the Baptist. Like, I mean, a lot of things have happened to Larry, all right? Larry's been through a lot. But Larry is well known and well loved. So you have to know that going into this illustration. Okay. So I'm going to do it with you. In a lot of ways, I might stop a few times to talk about it. But a lot of ways how we do it with the kids. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to teach a lesson to kids on substitutionary atonement. do I tell the kids, I am now going to teach you a lesson on substitutionary atonement? The answer is no, right? Is there a time that eventually you should use the word substitutionary atonement? Yeah, there is. We do want to get kids to that point. But when I talk about the substitutionary atonement of Christ, what do I say? I say, kids, a really important part of the gospel that you need to know is that Jesus took your place. Right? Can you explain the substitutionary atonement in terms of someone taking your place? And the answer is yes, right? Now, as the kids get older, they start doing things like playing sports and they understand what a substitute is, right? And so, oh, there's another vehicle as the kids get older saying, hey, you know what a substitute is? That person came and took your place. You weren't even happy about it. You were mad because you wanted to play the game, right? Or maybe you were the substitute, right? There's ways that you can, as kids develop, that you can keep bringing these concepts in. But the point of substitutionary atonement is Jesus took your place. All right. So, we're teaching this lesson. And so here's Larry. So the thing about Larry is the same thing that's true about all of us. And that is that Larry, although we all love him, Larry is a sinner. All right. And so here today, Larry is going to be our representative sinner. And, the problem with sinners, boys and girls, is that every sin always has to get punished by God. God always punishes sin. There's not even one sin that God doesn't punish. And so Larry's a sinner, and unfortunately that means that Larry has to get punished. And so Larry's going to remind us of us because we're all sinners. And I brought something that's going to remind us about the punishment of God. And that's this. And this is going to remind us about God's punishment. And so I'm going to need a volunteer, somebody that knows how to use a hammer and is good with a hammer. So I'm looking for a volunteer. Now, if I was in a room with a bunch of boys and girls, they'd all be raising their hand right now. That's why, like, adults are the worst. No. All right. Seth either got volunteered or he raised his hand. All right. So this is going to remind us about God's punishment and his wrath. And so because Larry is a sinner, then God's wrath is going to have to come down on Larry. So what I want you to do is come up here and you're going to take this hammer. And what I want you to do is, as hard as you can, after I count to three, I want you to hit Larry. All right, you're going to hit him right on the head because Larry's a sinner, right? So I thought about putting him on the table, but I thought ahead and I thought, I'm not sure whoever swings this hammer is going to hit or not. And I don't want to. So we're going to put Larry down here on the ground. All right. And I'm going to count to three. Yeah. So I'm going to count to three and then you're going to hit Larry. And I really, like, I'm telling you, I want you to hit him. I want you to hit him hard, right? All right. So pause on the timeout. You guys are already feeling it because you know Larry's been around for 13 years. What are the kids doing right now? Absolutely. Cause they know what happens when you're going to swing a hammer and you're going to hit Larry, right? But this is how it goes, right? So, all right. So unpause. All right. So I'm going to count to three and then you're going to swing that hammer. All right. Okay. You ready? One. Wait. Stop. You know what, boys and girls, we're all sinners and we deserve God's punishment. And God is going to swing the hammer of his punishment. Nothing can stop his hammer. But you know what, boys and girls, what we're learning in this passage is that Jesus took your place. And so this block is going to remind us of Jesus. And you see, boys and girls, what Jesus did is he took your place. And so he's going to go right over Larry, and God's punishment is going to fall, but it's going to fall on Jesus. So I say, we're going to count to three and God's wrath is going to fall. And that's what's going to happen. All right. One, two, three. All right. Often the kids even do a better job than that. All right. I say, thanks. So how's Larry? I'm like, how's Larry? Larry's fine, right? Larry is fine, but look what happened to my block. My block he smashed my block, right? Listen, boys and girls, Jesus took your place. God's wrath crushed him on the cross so that you can be free of his punishment and you can be fine, but Jesus was crushed, right? All right. So you can go sit down now. Thanks. And all the kids clap for him or whatever else, right? So Larry's fine. The block is not. The point is, you just did an object lesson that the kids were vested in emotionally. One of the kids got to do physically, and I do, like, walk around and show, like, my blocks get crushed. They get splintered, right? Like, this block really does get destroyed. And that reminds us of what Jesus did on the cross, right? So you're teaching Jesus. He was in my place. You just taught substitutionary atonement with a hammer and a Lego guy and a block, right? Because Jesus really did take our place. Now, there are a million ways to be creative and to do object lessons that the kids can connect to. If you just say, what's my main point? And then the curriculum can help you come up with object lesson ideas. You can come up with some of your own. You can dip into, you can use science illustrations. You can use, you know, we jump rope. You do all kinds of stuff. But the point is, get the kids engaged and connected to the main point, right? So even at illustrations, you notice how I kept saying, hey, this hammer reminds us of God's wrath and we're all sinners and that wrath is going to fall, right? Yeah. Even in the middle of doing that object lesson, I kept saying things that I was saying in the lesson, right? Because you're constantly bringing it back to this. I'm going to repeat this again and again and again. Okay. So that's what I mean by teach with illustration. And a great object lesson can go a long way in helping a kid understand. So remember why we're doing all this. We want to be effective because we have the greatest message that's ever been told. So let's tell it the best way that we possibly can. Okay. Are all of your object lessons going to be home runs? Are you always going to have a great illustration? No. Right. Sometimes you do them and you're like, bomb that one or never use that one again or whatever. But try, work at it. Okay. So, when it comes to working at it, just a couple things on that. I think given the age range that we have, what's a good lesson length and how long should it take to get ready for it? You know, those kind of things. I have taught even the curriculum that we are using. I've taught through this curriculum for 13 years, I guess. So, and I was using it before that. So I taught through this curriculum numerous times. What ended up taking me the most time is not necessarily the passage, but most often it was, how am I going to illustrate and how am I going to connect this? Because I feel pretty good about, I understand what the passage is. For you, you have to evaluate, you don't necessarily get to pick which passage we're up to when it gets to your month. So maybe it'd be something that you're totally familiar with. And it might be something that you're like, whoa, I haven't studied this in a while myself. And so I'm going to have to get back into it. So that'll take you longer. I would say you probably should be, it depends on where you're at as a teacher and your skill level and all of that. You should probably be targeting somewhere between 10 and 20 minutes, 10 and 25 minutes. Your lesson time should probably be something in there, would be my recommendation or encouragement. Mm-hmm. To do that, given the curriculum and given the nature of using narrative, I think you could probably get ready for that in up to 5 hours. I think you can do that in 5 hours and be ready. Now you can say like, no, I can't do that. I need longer than that. Okay. You need to know yourself. And if it takes you longer, then you got to factor that in. But I say 5 hours, not because that's a law or not, you know, I just want you to know it matters that we study to teach. I also don't want you thinking like, yeah, I need to go ahead and put in 30 hours for this teaching time or else I'm not going to be doing a good job. Use the curriculum. We'll walk through the curriculum a little bit as well, but like let the curriculum help you. Let your previous Bible knowledge help you. So I don't want you to underprepare. I also don't want you to think that this is, you know, the week that you're teaching, that all you're going to be doing in all of your free time is only studying the passage. I mean, that's great. Like, it's never going to hurt you to study more. But I also want to be reasonable in the amount of time that it takes and the amount of effort that it takes to get ready for a lesson. So I would say probably up to 5 hours, I would hope would be reasonable. And if it's more than that, then understand that and plan for that, right? If it's going to be more than 5 hours, you're not going to do all that in one day. You're going to have to spread it out, right? So have a plan. Monday night, I'm going to work just on reading the text in the background. And then I know I'm going to have some time Wednesday night. So Wednesday night, I'm just going to think about what are some good application things. And then Saturday afternoon, I'm going to go ahead and get my object lessons together and be ready to, right? Like have your own plan, given your own personal schedule and how you work when it comes to teaching. Okay. You are teaching a broad range. Is that ideal of ages of kids? And is that ideal? And the answer is no. Like, you know, that's not ideal. I know that's not ideal. Can a 2-year-old handle the same thing that a 12-year-old can? No. Right. So part of this is the nature of being in a developing church. So what should you do? I would say your teaching is probably going to be typically the majority of it will be too much for the littlest. And it'll be too little for the oldest is just the general I don't know any other way to do it. You can do things after the lesson for your older kids. You can do some either activity sheets or almost like a small group kind of interaction where maybe you give them a little bit more. The little kids, we're going to be thankful that they learned to sit, and that might be about it. Like for your 4 year old, the fact that they learn how to sit and listen to an entire 15 minute lesson, you are benefiting them and they are picking up more than you think, but you know, you may not need to have more loftier goals than that. When it comes to those different ages, you can do whatever you want in your own classrooms, but I probably would not seat the kids by age at this stage of the game because of the various ages that we have. Again, if you think that works for you, that's fine. But because we have a big variety of ages, I would leverage the fact that you have older kids who are able to model, and the fact that you don't want all of your squirrely ones sitting together. They will exponentially make them squirrelier, right? So spread out the squirreliness and put the 3-year-old next to the 10-year-old, and even let that be an opportunity to tell the 10-year-old, you have a chance here to help. Like, you can be a real helper in this classroom by helping 3-year-old Sally learn how to sit and listen. And right, so you're actually teaching even some discipleship principles on that basic level. So if I were you, I would have them. I would not put them all by age. And I would also say, when it comes to sitting, You will probably need to figure out which kids should not sit by one another. And if you have not already been in there, you probably will start to see that there are kids that should not be sitting together. And so you just say like, no, you can't sit by so-and-so. Sometimes it's a brother or sister. And that's like, that is the wrong situation for brother and sister to be sitting next to each other. Sometimes it's kids that are like, maybe they're cousin or super good friend. And so when they're together, they just chook and they are going to talk to each other the whole lesson, and they're going, you know, and you're like, no, we just can't have that. So be smart about even how kids are sitting in the room. So that's just general, I guess, general teaching stuff. So, all right. Before it's amazing how fast our time has gone this morning. I want to get to these functional items, but I'll pause for questions, just finishing the teaching effectively, communicating effectively, questions to that point. Yes, Melanie.
So are you recommending like a seating chart, or just as they're coming in, like you're kind of placing?
Just as they're coming in, just watching it yourself, and yep. Okay.
Uh-huh. All right. How many like leaders do you have usually? Like husband and wife team, or do you have like?
Yeah. So it's normally husband and wife, but not always. It's almost always two adults. And then, so like Sarah has a whole, like a crew of older, younger kids, that are helping her. So yeah, it's a little bit of a mixture. So some of our kids have been helping, and some of like our almost teenage or teenage kids have been helping children's ministry for a while, so they can actually be useful in that environment. So yeah. So right now we're looking at normally, I didn't look at it last week's, but you know, we're looking at what, 20 to 25 kids or 15 to.
I would say anywhere from like 15 to like 20.
Yeah.
I don't know if we've ever, anyone over 20.
Nothing over 20. Okay.
15 to 20.
Okay.
But if everybody was there, I think we could.
Yeah.
We could get a little bit more.
Yep. Yeah. So we're thankful for that. Even saying that, I appreciate you saying that. There are things that are, it's just the nature of being in a developing church. I know that many of you came from churches, everything was already developed. And so you have your different classrooms, and we're like, there's stuff that we are in the process of figuring out, and we'll have to adjust like as we go. So is there going to come a time when we're going to have to say we're splitting classrooms? Absolutely. Right. Is it going to be exactly when everybody wants? Well, probably not. Some of you will think like we can go longer the way it is. Some of you say like, this is, we've got to end this right now. So it's going to take some just wisdom and working through like, when do we start splitting ages and how do we split them? Typically what you're going to see is the younger the child is, the quicker you need to get them in their age group. The older kids, we're going to let them be together longer, right? So your first split's probably going to be like a nursery toddler preschool split, right? And you get them together, and you let your kindergartners, because your kindergartners have already either started to learn to read or whatever else, like, okay, is it the best thing for them to be with a third grader? Well, no, but they'll be okay. Is the kid that doesn't even know letters, is that going to be great to be with a fourth grader? No, not really. So you're going to let your older kids be in a bigger group longer, and you're going to get your younger kids in a more age-appropriate group faster, if that makes sense. But not there yet, and so it'll just take some time. Okay. Let's get to the, what I call the functional stuff. Getting subs. I want to encourage you to get your own subs. So I think you all who are currently teaching already have the list. There's phone numbers on there. If you know that you are going on vacation or you're, you know, whatever, I want to encourage you to get your own subs. So Sarah is helping on the scheduling side of things. And of course, I'm super involved at this point. We're happy to help if you get stuck or if like there's something you need, but by and large, you should just be making your own trades and getting your own subs. We'd love to have that communicated. So like I put who's teaching up even on like the keynote show, and it helps us to know who to expect. So if you can communicate who you got to switch with, that's great. But I just want to encourage you to get your own sub as much as possible. Trades, full-on swaps, obviously, I think I mentioned, so our goal is to have one couple from Grace Church of the Valley a month. And so right now they're just coming on whatever week works best for them. And so this week, Josh and Jessica won the Grace Church lottery because their week, the Barringtons are coming up. And then they went ahead and took tomorrow. So they're still serving this month anyway. So you won't be serving every month. Ideally, I would say in a quarter, so in a 3 month span, I would love to get to the point where you're not serving more than twice in a 3 month span is my typical, like what I'd say is hopefully the best thing for you and the healthiest thing for you. You know, we're not at that point right now, but I would love to get to that point where we had enough of a rotation that you would serve twice in a 3 month window. Okay. So that would be like an ideal to shoot for or to move towards. When you throw in a vacation or I got sick or whatever else, and all of a sudden, you know, it's been 2 months and you've been to the actual preaching service, you know, three times in 2 months. And that's probably not best for your own soul. And so I don't want to see that happening. You're welcome to make whatever trade you want, but, if you trade with people and all of a sudden you've gone, you know, 3 weeks back to back in children's ministry, you know that that's not great for you. And, so just don't do it. Just, can't switch with you, you know, whatever. So, okay. All right. Using the curriculum. I'm going to use my fancy screen that you've been waiting all this time for. All right. And then now there's no signal. Yep, it's all ready. Everything was fine. And then checked it. Come on.
Function 7 or whatever.
It's just not reading at all. I know the source button is not working either, so I knew that one's going to work. All right, I'm going to abandon this in just a second because we don't have time to monkey. All this work to hang this screen. Even the menu's not. Boo. But it also is going to have to cycle and. All right. I might turn it back on in a second, but I'm gonna start talking to the curriculum anyway. So you can get if you go to the church website, so ChristChurchRippon.org, you go to resources and then children's ministry. Resources, children's ministry. That's our whole children's ministry page. It has the schedule, on what the upcoming lessons are. And it also has a link to the teacher workbook, right? So whatever week you're on, you can even look ahead, see what your lesson is. And it's a PDF. That workbook is a PDF. And so you can download it if you want. You can just look at it online. And, there are a couple other, so that's your resource for getting the curriculum. There are a couple other things. We have the coloring sheets are also in PDF. And so if you want me to send you the coloring sheets for your week, you can always just ask for that. I didn't want to post those online, just because then they, you know, anybody could reproduce any amount that they wanted to. So you have to ask for those, but if you want to do coloring sheets, then they're usually the same picture that is in your lesson that starts your lesson. It'll be that picture, only, you know, not filled in, obviously. You'll have to, have them color it. So we have that. I also have some physical books. So there's an activity book and then there's a craft book. So just the straight honesty, I've been teaching children's ministry for a long time and crafts and I do not get along. So like what I do when I get a craft book is go, and I'm never going to see that again. I just can't, you know, I love object lessons and I love other activity things, but I'm just not a craft person. But if you are, we have this craft book and that's great. There's crafts within the lesson, but there's also this craft book, if you want to hold that. And then the activity book, these are great for a little bit, older kids. So they have a variety of things like, you know, what's the difference pictures, you know, so they can, and you can copy these. We're allowed to do that. You know, crossword puzzles, you know, things like that are for a little bit of an older kid. So these activities, are a whole bunch of different things and they work great. So, you know, matching the picture to the, you know, whatever. So this is the activity book that is also available to you. If you want a maze, nothing like a good maze for the kids to cheat and just draw the line straight to the end. Yeah. All right.
Are those online as well?
No, these we just have physically. So, okay. So those are resources. The lamp is now ready for me to turn it back on. So we will and see if it'll work. While that's powering up, let me jump ahead to the other two topics and then we'll come back to the curriculum. Bathroom use. So I want to talk about bathroom use. We do not have a fully functioning children's ministry handbook yet. The reason for that is the last handbook that I wrote, it came in right around like 27 pages and I don't think we're probably ready for that. And so what I want to do is take that and put it in a more like where we're at appropriate level. But I do fully intend for us to have a children's ministry handbook that is our policies and procedures and all of that. So part of what we're juggling right now is an attempt to say we're developing and at the same time, safety and caring for kids matters. But I don't want us to be absurd in the level of policy that we have and those kind of things, right? So we're trying to thread that. It matters at any size of a church that we care about protecting our kids. So I don't want to be, I don't want to act like that's not a reality. So when it comes to things like diapers, we haven't had a lot of, diaper kids, but, you know, one of our policies is going to be that guys don't change diapers. And then whatever it takes to make it work, not having guys taking kids to the bathroom at the very least by themselves. So even if you have, you know, a guy and a helper walk the kids to the bathroom and they stand out in the hallway or whatever, we do have younger kids. And so sometimes they're going to need help. And that's just the reality. But we just have to be super sensitive from the outset that we love our kids and we protect our kids. The reality is that churches are, I hate to even talk about it, but the reality is that churches are like open prey to predators because predators look at a church and go easy target because all they want is a warm body. So, you know, they'll let people get away with anything in the church and we're not, right? So I'm going to give you the same speech I give everybody. So don't take it overly personally. But if you ever have abused a child or if you've ever had a desire to abuse a child, then get the frick out, right? Like get out. So we don't want you in our children's ministry. We don't want you around our kids. So it matters. So it matters. We love our kids and protect our kids. So I don't know how to say it stronger. Like we're happy to care for people and counsel people and walk alongside people as adults. We're not fine to let our kids be open and available. So there's a difference in serving in children's ministry and receiving the kind of counsel that somebody really needs who's struggling with a sin. There's no sin that isn't forgivable. But children's ministry is not for you if that's you. So. All right. Sorry. So we need to care, and we also need to not create ridiculous and impossible and unsustainable. You know, you got to have 5 people to take kids to the bathroom and whatever else. Like, it's just not realistic, right? So I would encourage you, we're going to encourage parents to take kids to the bathroom beforehand, which hopefully will cut down on a lot of things. Downstairs, there actually is a kid's bathroom, that's down there. It's not actually in the basement. So it's up the first level of stairs. It's actually kind of like right below this room. It's got a kid size toilet in it. So I think that's a great, you know, I mean, that's a good spot to go. So you're not like heading up to the lobby bathroom or whatever else. So I'd encourage you to, you know, to point kids that direction. Can you let an older kid go to the bathroom by themselves? Absolutely. Right. So again, we got to be careful, but let's not be crazy. Like there's first graders that get hall passes to go to the bathroom. There's second graders at school that like they walk to a bathroom and they use the bathroom and then they go back to the class. So let's not think that every kid has got to be like, got to walk them down to the bathroom. They need to know where it is. And so that needs to be clear, but can you send an older kid to the bathroom? Yeah, you can. So you see what I mean by like, let's not, you know, like you got to be careful, but let's also remember, like, kids are capable of walking to the bathroom. So it's usually our little kids, obviously kids that are in diapers or, you know, that's where the challenge comes in. So, it's not an ideal situation with a setup where you have the kids in the room and there's not a bathroom right there. That's the easiest when there's a bathroom right there and you can just like, you know, it's all very visible in public. But we'll have to, you know, do the best we can. So, I don't know. Does that help with maybe you want more bathroom policies than that? I don't know. But yeah, question for you.
When we get to the point of having membership established, will children's ministry be limited to members?
It will. Yep. So great. Thanks for asking that. It will be limited to members. And also everyone who serves in children's ministry will be required to do a background check. And so I have here in my little hands, even for all of you. So it's actually 2 pages. So I would love for you guys to fill this out. The first page is the actual information I need to run a background check. Second page is like a bunch of the legal gobbledygook that I am obligated to give to you. I say legal gobbledygook. I want you to know, like, I care about your privacy. I care about your information. What I'm going to do with this information is run it through a background check company that I've been using for years. And then this gets shredded. This is not, you know, we're not keeping your, cause I have to have your, besides your permission, I also need a social security number. So I care about your information. But there's only so many different ways to do background check and we're not doing like a live scan fingerprinting thing. So we're also trying to balance making this accessible and easy for you while also saying like, well, we still need to do it. And so, you know, so, you fill out this, authorization form and then we'll run a background check. So I would like all of you who are currently, serving to do this. Our leadership team is also doing these. So Joe's involved and he's on the leadership team. So, I mean, he only has to do one, but so like Eric and I are doing these as well, just to say like our whole leadership team's been background checked, which will also be a something that will happen into the future. Anyone on the elder team will also be background checked. Okay. So if you are currently serving, if you can take one of these, maybe you don't need to fill it out this morning, but if you want to get it back to me, maybe tomorrow, if you're coming to Foundations class, which is about membership, and we'll talk about even serving. So yeah. So background checks, for everybody. Okay. Good. Any other questions on that? That's a great question. Questions on some of the practical stuff. Okay. My very fancy on again, off again did not work. If you have a phone and you want to just pull up our website and look at the PDF, you can. I just want to encourage you a couple things about the lesson. And I've gone over, and I want to be sensitive to your guys' time. So Josh and Jessica were about to get the like, best deal of their lives. Cause I was actually going to like walk through the lesson and say like how I would teach it if it were me. And so, but now we're out of time. And so, and now I can't show you up on the screen. But click on children's ministry and then it says to access the teacher book, click here. So I'm clicking on that. That's why I didn't do it on my iPad, which would be bigger. All right. So we are at lesson number 6, God Preserves Noah. And so that's Genesis 8:1-9:17. So I'm going to flip down to lesson 5. So you can find lesson 6, God Preserves Noah. There's a nice old Noah and a couple animals and a rainbow. If you see on the second page of lesson 6, there's a central truth that's clearly called out there. The central truth in the curriculum is God faithfully loves his people and keeps his promises. All right. So this is what I was talking about when I was talking about the 1 a.m. principle. Do you have to make it the central truth that's in the curriculum? You don't have to. It's just that it's there. At least points you in the right direction. You might want to make your central truth tomorrow: God always keeps his promises. You can say that over and over again. It's memorable. Like, God always keeps his promises. You can make your central truth. You can use the curriculum is your servant, not your master, right? So you're the one teaching, explaining. It's just the curriculum is there to help you. So don't feel like the curriculum is like chaining you. It's giving you help. It's doing a lot of legwork for you. But so central truth, key verse, and then so that overview page is really helpful. Supporting truths, so other things you could be talking about, objectives in your lesson. I just think those are things a good curriculum does. Summarizes the lesson, spotlight on the gospel, again, because we're gospel-centered. That's helpful to read through that paragraph and go, how am I going to point to the gospel in Noah coming off of the ark, and what do we do about the covenant of God when he promises I'll never flood the earth again? Like, how do I then point to the gospel? It always helps to know what was taught the week before you, right? So last week was the flood. This week is God Preserves Noah. The next week is God Judges the Nations at Babel. It's just helpful to have that perspective as you're teaching, so you don't reteach something that's already been taught or go into something that's going to happen the next week, because you don't need to do that. Keep your lesson your lesson. Okay. The lesson commentary is essentially a Bible commentary on your passage. Can you use other resources and commentaries and study Bibles? Of course you can, but like, this is an actual like Bible commentary right here for you that the writers of the curriculum say, this is the most important exegetical information. This is the most important background information. Like, we'll just give it to you right here and you could read it. Okay. Should you read the lesson commentary as you're teaching? And the answer is no. Don't stand up there and read the lesson commentary, right? That's so that your mind is connected to biblical truth. You understand the passage. But that's not like the script for you to read to the kids. Okay. Lesson outline. You can see they break it down. The ages 3 to 5 and 6 to 11. That's stuff again that you can play with what you want to include and not include. It's got lesson questions, which helps you kind of set up some amount of a goal. Like, what are things I want to be sure I'm saying? Lesson activities. So some of these, again, you're never going to be able to do all of these lesson activities. Pick the ones that you like the most or that you think will work the best. You can take some from the 3 to 5 activity and ask a 3 to 5-year-old to do it so that they're still engaged. Then there's activities for 6 to 8 and for 9 to 11. So again, these are suggestions and they're concepts. Some of them you'll be like, that was fantastic. I never would have thought of that. And some of them are like, well, that's kind of lame. Fine. Then use the ones that are fantastic. Just get rid of the ones that are lame. I mean, 50 minutes can actually go pretty fast. If you're going to teach a 20-minute lesson and you're going to, you know, have some snacks and you're going to lose some bathroom time or whatever else, and pretty soon you're like, woo, like, what happened to my time? So you may not have as much activity time as you think. And so that's the end of the curriculum. So sorry, guys, you're still going to have to do it. But I was going to like teach the lesson for you. Yeah. So they switched. Oh yeah. Sorry. That's what I said. They got off and then they are back on. So it was very kind of them. Oh, absolutely. Yep. Questions and then we're done. Correct. Yep. So don't. Yeah. That's my philosophy is don't read the whole passage. If I were you, I'd pick some key verses. But yeah, don't, there's times it'll be like, it'll be three chapters or four chapters. So the nature of narrative, even especially in the Old Testament, is you have much bigger chunks of material. So, So the question is, what aren't we being more biblical when we read every verse? And the answer is, you're not being more biblical if the kids are totally not listening and they don't have the ability to understand what you're saying. That's not more biblical. So like, that's not more spiritual to read more verses if kids are just like zoned out, right? So, pick some key verses, read throughout as you go throughout the lesson, right? So maybe you read two verses and then you teach a little bit and then you read a couple more, like you can mix it up. So yeah, don't feel like you should read every single verse that that lesson covers.
I often want to talk to the original writers of that curriculum about why they chose to include that in there. And I tried to read 73 verses from the King James.
Yeah. 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 So that's a live and learn one, right? Yeah. So.
And then the next month when the kids saw you as a teacher, they went,
oh. Very funny. All right, other questions, comments, cries of shock and outrage, Jessica. So my office is always. Thanks for asking. So my office is always open on Sunday nights. This is the door we open. You'll feel free to come in. I won't normally have my screen hanging here. So in this cupboard right here, we have things like a great big thing of animal crackers, which will work really well for for the art. That's right. So sometimes it's going to be lower than others, even though there wasn't a church service. We've got Dixie cups and. Okay. All right. You're always welcome to donate, but not required. So if you see that we're lacking something, you can either get it and then submit a reimbursement. You can ask me to like, hey, can you go buy more or whatever? And we can do that. So yeah, if you see like, yeah, absolutely. If you just want to donate, just do it. That's correct. So Joe is reading like 90 verses. Josh is like tasing kids. And so. Different. Everyone's got their own thing. So on the check-in sheet, we have a thing that talks about allergies. So parents are supposed to write down what allergies the kids have. You'll get that check-in sheet. After everyone gets their checks in, you'll have that sheet because that's what you use to then check out the kids. And so that check-in sheet will have a note section that should tell you about allergies. So if you are going to donate, sensibly. So, you're not going to be able to give something that like, if a kid has, kind of everything under the sun and it's wheat and it's peanut and it's everything, then usually the parents have like instructed those kids and those kids know. A lot of times they'll bring their own. So I never want a kid to feel bad about that. But at the same time, you're not going to be able to like get something that covers every single kid. So shoot for relatively bland, so things like an animal cracker or a goldfish or, things that aren't, I would stay totally away from something. With peanuts, like don't do stuff you don't need to do. There's plenty of kid, Nilla wafers and anyway, things like that, that are as broad as can be. Don't go on Josh's night. So. All right. The other thing that's up here is there's a box full of, supplies, paper, it's blank paper, glue sticks, kid scissors, all those kind of things. So those are all in there. If there's something you think needs added, then by all means add. Okay.
So do we have crayons in there? I can't
remember. Yes, there are crayons in there. It's a source of intention, crayons are, because some people say crayons. It ends up sounding more like crowns when I say it. So crayons. Anyway, so yeah. Yes.
So in regards to that sign-in sheet. So
yes, sign-in sheet.
Like, you should just go in the back, maybe, like, right?
I usually come in and grab it and give it to you. Or you can go get it.
Yep. Gotcha. If you don't get it, Sarah will hunt you down. So thanks, Sarah. Okay. But, yeah, it's probably easier if you just grab yourself.
Every parent, so, like, even new people, we should direct them.
Correct.
The greeter should direct them to sign in their
Correct.
Class right before you sit.
That's right. Okay. Yep. So kids that have come... that are going to come on a repeat basis, we just add them throughout the week. And then, you know, just the, it's just the new kids that have to fill in their information, you know, over again or for the first time, not over again. Yep. So yeah, let's use that check-in. That check-in has phone numbers on it, and that's what you should be using to call parents if you have any kind of health need or behavior need or whatever else. So parents ought to, and I can do a better job communicating that. Like parents ought to have their phones. That's what we're using to communicate. So whether you send them a text or you send them a call, like phones should be available during the service. So you can call them or text them. Can you just walk up and go that? Yes, you can absolutely do that. So yes, particularly, if his name's Luca, just go get Kathy. I'm busy, but she's not. So.
Excuse me. Yeah, right.
Yeah. All right, Erica. Yeah. So, here's the collision of like worlds and viewpoints. I want to stress parents, and if a parent sends an older kid, I'm probably not going to fight them on it. So I'll communicate parents. So I don't know if you noticed at the end of the service, I've been saying parents, please go get your kids. So I'm going to consistently say parents. What happens if you get a teenager that says, I'm here for, you know, I'm here for them? I would, you know, assuming that you know that they are indeed their sibling and whatever else, you can even ask, like, did your parents say you should come get them? You know what I mean? You can ask, do I want to hold the line that, like, if it's not an apparent, it's not going to happen? I don't know. I know some people say, like, well, yeah, you don't even, but I think it makes sense.
Because they're older, like, if you're really seeing a 3-year-old.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So you can always clarify. One of the things that we did was we created like a, and this might, again, you're like, is it worth the work? We created a like who can pick up list. And we even did that with, is there anyone outside your family that's allowed to pick up? And then it was just clear, like, yeah, grandma's going to pick up sometimes. So you know, we also, at Grace Church of the Valley, it was at a different level in terms of amount of people, but we will get there. Like, I mean, if God wills, if more people come and children's ministry grows, then you do keep adding policy, and it does keep getting more and more the further you go. And that is a reality. Sarah.
Is there a way, and again, I know part of this where all, I mean, a lot of us, like, are sitting out and very comfortable together, but, obviously, I'm in there without another adult, so it can make it a little bit different for me. But
yeah.
I think sometimes because that bottom room's kind of become like the playroom.
Uh-huh.
So when you have older kids that are coming in during checkout time, so obviously the kids are all sitting and you're trying to check. I mean, especially
right.
when it's just
totally.
The ambulance,
yep, but, I hear that.
So when you're like they're all sitting, but then you have these other kids. So when they see those kids, they're like, well, let's play time now. So now
right.
they're
all playing.
And now
yeah.
I'm trying to check out. And we do have younger kids. And as we're quickly growing and we have more younger kids, it gets a little chaotic to be like, okay, now I have kids running around. I think I've been checked out.
Totally.
I don't really know if you've been checked out. But now I have like a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. And I'm like, wait, where's your mom? I don't want you going out that door because that door doesn't actually really shut.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, okay, wait, and I have kids running around.
Totally.
And like, is there a way to like, can we like empty the room before it turns?
Yeah.
Just
yep.
So that
it's great.
To me, it feels safer. And like, even last week we had a newer kid, and someone came to get him, and they didn't even have their name on the list. And I was like, and I luckily, obviously, there was only 60 of us, so I recognized the person, I recognized they came together. But I always think like, we're quickly getting to that point where. We might have 100 people here, and I don't really know where you came from. And now
right.
we have a little chaos.
Totally.
Totally. Kind of empty the room first.
Yeah. So I love the suggestion. I hope we get to that point.
Yeah.
That is a logistics challenge. I do pray that'll happen. And we need to like think ahead and deal with things. So yeah, I like the emptying the room idea. I'd also say so we can absolutely do that. So older kids can't come into the room. You know, and play until all the kids are checked out. They will be fine for the, you know, 5 minutes or whatever that they can't be in there. The other thing is once you check a kid out, I can also help communicate this. Once you check a kid out, like you're done. Like if a parent has said, I have responsibility to my child, if they feel like it's fine for their child to, run around the church parking lot or whatever else, that's on the parent. Like, they're the ones parenting, right? So once you click the little, once the checkout happens, then, you know, so that's not to say you know, that we can't keep the room empty. I'm just saying,
yeah,
once you check them out, what the parents choose to do after that is on the parent. So yeah, we can, I can even say that on Sunday night and you guys can start enforcing that. Like, hey, I don't be coming in here to play because all the kids haven't been checked out yet. So just until all the kids get checked out, it's like a closed room, I guess, is what to enforce.
Because then, there's that thing. Well, a lot of times you check them out, they leave them in there.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, who's checked out? Like, I'm going to check you. You know,
you get that stronger, like, boundary. Like, they left.
Right.
And then they come back in. And it's
not. Logistically, it might be easier to have some sort of setup near the door where you come and check.
Yeah,
all right.
There needs to be a physical boundary. We'll just wait at the door.
Okay.
Come in your kids,
yeah.
We'll let them out. No one's coming in. And then all the kids are out. Yeah.
That's great. So I wonder if we can even get, like, if we either have a little table or put a, you know, don't just let it be. Yeah, put a music stand. Put. Perfect. So just put it in front of the door and. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I'm sorry, what's that? It's a restaurant? What's? I don't know what. It's crazy talking here. You guys definitely need to be done because you're woo! You've lost it. Okay. We can do that.
And like Noah is obviously like super responsible and like he's playing the fighting game with those kids and they were all fine.
Right.
But yeah, it does get that little bit of like.
Yeah. And it does, I mean, checked out historically is when things feel the most out of control and you're like, yeah. And it's also the time that you need to interact with the parent if you need to. And you want to, like, all the parents see is checkout. And I think most parents are understanding, but you also don't want checkout to be the most chaotic time when that's the only thing a parent sees. And they're like, oh, the kids have been, yeah, kids have been swinging from the chandeliers for the last 50 minutes, you know, like. Yeah.
What? Is this what you guys did?
Yeah.
Maybe if you were running, you would hurt us upstairs. But,
yeah.
But yeah, I just think it's like, what do we look like?
Yep. So you might even want to plan like a final activity when it's getting to the point that it's close to done. You might even want to have a coloring sheet or have them sit back down so that they're actually seated. You know, play a game before you do your activity time if parents keep coming while you're, you know, in the middle of runaround time or whatever. So, Joe.
Are you okay with candy bribery?
Am I okay with candy bribery? Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. Yes. Yep. Yeah. No, I'm good with reward and yeah, that's fine. I even I would do about once every 2 months, I would do a lesson that was just review and I'd do it Jeopardy style and actually had a thing on the PowerPoint that you had the Jeopardy categories and some of the categories were like only if you're four. You can only answer this question if you're 4 years old, right? So they were 4 year old appropriate questions. And then I had these gift boxes and it was all like dollar store stuff. So they could get like a puzzle or a thing of bubbles or whatever else. And that was like, I mean, the kids like ate that stuff up, right? Like that's fantastic. You know, so you can do a variety of things like that. There's always going to be kids that are sad that they didn't get a candy or didn't get a prize. And so you do have to work through that. Are you also going to give out, you know, you're going to have like a prize for this and you're also going to give out something that every kid has or, you know, or you can help kids learn that they don't always get a prize because that's a fine lesson to learn too. So, yeah. Okay. Anything else? So just on the topic of, you know, safety and policy, I want you to know, like, we're just getting started now in my mind, like we're still in, like, we're moving forward. Are you going to see a policy manual that I'm going to ask you to like agree to and follow? And the answer is yes. So I don't have it this morning. But are we heading that direction? And the answer is yes. So I don't want you to be surprised by that. And hope it doesn't bother you that we don't have it all done right now, but we are headed there. So, yeah, just don't be surprised when you get a policy manual. So, okay. It's another thing of just where we're at as a church, that there are some things that we're not doing right now, and it's not because we don't want to, it's because we haven't. And so we're sorting through some of the things we're moving towards. We just haven't got there yet. And so I want to conclude with, I want you to be engaged, bringing your own, what you see, things that need to be improved. Like if you go, hey, it has been too long and we don't have enough policy in this particular topic or whatever else, please, like, let's work together. This is part of like the body working together. If you see things that are safety issues or like an emptying the room kind of suggestion, like, don't ever hesitate to say, hey, can we please put this into place, or can we at least talk about it? It doesn't mean the answer is always going to be yes, but like, I want to know, like, you're going to be the ones down there and I'm not. So what are you experiencing? What are you seeing? What do we need to, you know, change? So please don't ever feel like you're, that it's a bother or that it's not, you should be bringing things up. So don't hesitate. Okay. There's things that you think, hey, we need to do a better job on this, then let's talk about it. The things that you need from me, then let's talk about it. So let's do the best job we can in children's ministry to make it, like I said at the beginning, a premier ministry of our church. Okay. Okay. Thanks so much for your time. You guys are great. Thanks for giving me a Saturday morning, as well as all the times you spend studying. So hope the rest of your Saturday is good. I hope Josh and Jessica get to do something else besides study, but they probably not.